breaking the upper limit. The positive-to-negative ratios in most organizations are woefully inadequate and leave substantial room for improvement.
Increasing longevity.
Negative emotions can lead to serious problems. Thousands of studies have revealed the damaging results of stress, anger, and hostility on the mind and body. In contrast, positive emotions can buffer us against adverse health effects and depression. They enable faster recovery from pain, trauma, and illness. And positive emotions might lead to an increase in lifespan. Researchers who studied 839 Mayo Clinic patients over a 30-year period found a link between optimism in how people explained life events and a lower risk of early death. And a landmark study of 180 elderly Catholic nuns revealed that nuns with more positive emotions live significantly longer than nuns with fewer positive emotions. The researchers studied handwritten autobiographies each woman had written in her early 20s. The frequency of positive emotions in these early writings was scored and compared to mortality rates for these women when they were 75 to 95 years old. The results were staggering. The nuns who reported experiencing more positive emotions lived on average about 10 years longer. Even more startling was the fact that 25 nuns in the group with fewer positive emotions had passed away at the time of study, compared with only 10 deaths in the group with more positive emotions. To put this in perspective, consider that cigarette smoking has been shown to reduce life expectancy by 5.5 years for males and 7 years for females. So, negative emotions might cut more years off life expectancy than smoking. There's no Surgeon General's warning about negative emotions, but there should be.
Physical and mental health effects.
In addition to extending our lifespan, positive emotions can improve our daily physical and mental well-being. A study of Harvard graduates revealed that the way in which young men explain negative events, pessimistically or optimistically, predicted several physical health outcomes decades later. Specifically, optimism early in life predicted good health later in life. Other studies suggest that optimism can ward off and shorten the duration of the common cold. Based on studies that analyzed blood counts, optimists were found to have more T4 or helper cells that fight against infection. Optimists have also been found to average less than one doctor visit per year, where pessimists average more than 3.5 per year. Increasing the positive emotions in your life might even help to minimize your healthcare costs. It's clear that positive emotions directly affect our physical health, but what about our mental health and interactions with others? Barbara Fredrickson, director of the Positive Emotions and Psychophysiology Laboratory at the University of Michigan, has done a great deal of research on this subject. She reports, "Positive emotions do much more than merely signal well-being. Positive emotions also improve coping and produce well-being. They do so not just in the present, pleasant moment, but over the long term as well. Positive emotions are not trivial luxuries, but instead may be critical necessities for optimal functioning." Indeed, Fredrickson concludes that positive emotions protect us from and can undo the effects of negative emotions, fuel resilience and can transform people, broaden our thinking, encouraging us to discover new lines of thought or action, break down racial barriers, build durable physical, intellectual, social, and psychological resources that can function as reserves during trying times, produce optimal functioning in organizations and individuals, and improve the overall performance of a group when leaders express more positive emotions. It appears that science is just now beginning to scratch the surface on this topic. After centuries of studying mental illness, experts are finally investigating and attempting to measure mental wellness.
Chapter 4. Tom's Story, An Overflowing Bucket.
As you listen to this program, you may be wondering, isn't being positive or negative genetic and somewhat hard to change? The short answer is yes. We all know people who seem to be, and probably are, born with a negative predisposition. and you undoubtedly have met people who seem innately irrepressibly positive. The scientific community has varying views on this matter. Some studies suggest that positivity and negativity are primarily rooted in nature. Others argue for nurture. The most common theory right now is that both nature and nurture make a significant and possibly equal contribution. Noted psychologist Ed Diener describes how our capacity for happiness has a baseline measure, much like our physical weight. Just as some people are predisposed to be thin no matter what they eat, some have a natural tendency to be happier than others. But our level of positive emotions can certainly rise or fall a great deal based on what happens to us over time. And it would not hurt most of us to go on a diet consisting of more positive emotions and fewer negative emotions. Regardless of an individual's innate starting point, regular bucket filling can increase his or her positive emotions. To illustrate the long-term impact, we decided to share a personal story.
A birthday present.
Shortly after we started working on this book, I realized that Don's birthday was right around the corner. Since we were creating a book about positive emotions, I decided to write him a letter detailing the importance of bucket filling in my own life. I figured this birthday present would have more meaning than a standard gift. And knowing that Don was facing an uphill battle with cancer, I thought this was the right time to express my appreciation and gratitude. When I was young, I remember Don saying that we should gather to celebrate all the great things that a person has done while they're still around to be a part of the celebration. When he went to funerals, it bothered him that so many people waited until they were eulogizing a loved one to liberally fill his or her bucket. "Why not do this while they are alive?" he would ask. So on Don's 79th birthday, I shared my personal story with him. When he read it, he was moved to tears. A few days later, Don asked if I would consider sharing my story in this book. He thought it would be a good illustration of continuous bucket filling, and I agreed. What follows is the story I gave to Don on his birthday. It is an account of how regular bucket filling shaped my own life while I was growing up.
Searching for early traces of talent.
As the first child of my generation in a large extended family, I benefited from a unique method of child rearing. It certainly defied the conventional wisdom at that time. From the day I was born, each member of my family was determined to help me focus on what I did best. They provided constant support and encouragement. By the time I turned 4, my mother and grandmother had spotted my keen interest in reading, so they would sit with me for hours on end, helping me learn to read. This teaching, nurturing, and attention made a real difference. Whenever relatives dropped by, they would ask what I was reading or pose specific questions about the activities I enjoyed. It is now easy to see they were looking for early cues to my natural yearnings and talents. The minute my family noticed my passion in a certain area, they encouraged me to learn as much as possible on that topic. They were never shy with their praise and always quick to compliment even the smallest accomplishments. Then, when I was about 8 or 9, the bucket fillers who surrounded me noticed my entrepreneurial spirit, and they could tell that I enjoyed leading my peers. So when I was 10, my grandfather, Don, suggested starting my own business. I loved the idea and decided to open a snack stand. As always, the rest of my family was thrilled to help me pursue a new passion, and they rallied around this project. After a few months, this little enterprise was doing well. Biz Kids had enough business to move beyond buy-in from the local wholesale club, and a major candy distributor agreed to give our company a bulk rate and deliver to our location. We eventually moved beyond snacks, expanding into selling apparel and small merchandise. By the time I was 12, the operation employed more than 20 of my classmates, and we had made a couple $1,000s in real profit to share amongst ourselves. After a few years in business, this story landed on the cover of the local newspaper and was picked up by national newswires. All of the caring, attention, and genuine bucket filling were making a major difference in my life. My bucket was overflowing, and this allowed me to concentrate on filling the buckets of everyone around me. At the end of each month, I would give out awards and commission checks based on how much each person had sold. It was fun to watch as my own bucket filling lifted the spirits of my friends, family members, and very young coworkers. This focus on positive encouragement continued throughout my education. My parents asked about my favorite classes and extracurricular activities on a daily basis. And instead of dipping from my bucket when I wasn't doing well in music or art courses, they encouraged me to focus more time on the areas that gave me personal satisfaction. They noticed that I was quite analytical and enjoyed numbers and current events, so they recommended that I spend more time studying mathematics and the social sciences. Even though I was already an A student in those areas, my family realized there would be a much greater return on my education if I devoted more time to the subjects for which I had a natural passion. Unlike most of my teachers and my friends' parents, my parents were not determined to make me well-rounded. Given that my rhythm seems to have been surgically removed at birth, they understood that pushing me to be a better musician was fruitless. I might get to average at best. A popular saying in my home was this age-old maxim: never try and teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and it annoys the pig. As a young student, I found this quite liberating. I didn't have to try and be good at everything. Instead, I was able to strive for greatness in my areas of natural talent.
A safe and welcoming home.
In contrast to my own home, I recall how strange it felt when I visited a friend's house in grade school. We would walk in the door, filled with after-school energy, and the first thing his mother would say was always along the lines of, "Did I say you could have a friend over again? Did you get in trouble at school again? Or, you better not have flunked that test." Maybe what she said was warranted sometimes, but I was amazed that the first thing out of his mom's mouth was always so negative. Another one of my classmates would arrive home each day to find a handwritten list of negative notes on her bed with phrases like, "You need to improve your attitude." These were not very welcoming environments, especially when I was used to going to my house and hearing things like, "How was school today? What do you feel like doing this afternoon? Do you want to show me any of the work that you did today? Or, did you guys get to play basketball in gym class today?" Which my mom knew was our favorite sport. At first, I thought these friends must have had troubled families, but over time, I found out this was common. In hindsight, I wonder if this explains why my friends and I spent so much time at my house while growing up. When we were there, our buckets were filled with positive support and encouragement. My house was a kind of home base where we could go to refuel on positive emotions before returning to the negativity-laden real world.
Confronting a major challenge.
My life continued to unfold in this positive way until I was 16. At that point, I started experiencing poor vision in my left eye and confronted my first big life obstacle. Doctors discovered multiple tumors in my left eye and performed several major surgeries. A year later, all sight in my left eye had been lost, permanently. On top of that, the condition indicated a possible genetic abnormality that causes sporadic tumors to grow throughout the body. The results of a DNA test confirmed that I had this extremely rare disorder, von Hippel-Lindau disease. As a result, tumors were likely to show up in my pancreas, kidneys, eardrums, adrenal glands, brain, and spine with no advance warning. Upon hearing this news for the first time, I was shocked and nervous. But on some level, I was surprised by how little the news dampened my spirits. From that day forward, instead of dwelling on the negative or uncontrollable aspects of this disease, my family helped me focus on what could be done. Although there was a strong degree of apprehension in my mind, I never got depressed. At a crucial moment, that kind of genuine caring and positivity had a remarkable influence. Within the first week of finding out about my condition, I immersed myself in learning how to manage and live with this disorder. When friends would ask me about losing vision in my left eye, I would be quick to point out that the vision in my right eye was 20/10, much better than average. Looking back, the key was not viewing my prognosis as any type of curse or death sentence. Instead, I saw it as an opportunity to be proactive and to stay on top of my physical health. After continuing to learn more about this rare disease, I discovered that most of the tumors associated with my condition were manageable with early detection and treatment. I resolved to measure my progress with regular scans and checkups. In the meantime, Things continued almost exactly as they had before, socially, athletically, and scholastically. My everyday life did not change. Over the next several years, the only time I thought about my condition was every 6 to 12 months, when it was time for medical checkups. Sure, waiting for the results of my MRI and CT scans made me anxious, but I managed to keep those feelings in perspective. In many ways, my confidence and spirit were stronger than ever. My approach was to confront these challenges head-on. I'm not sure I was totally conscious of my attitude at the time, but I didn't let these problems overwhelm me. A decade later, my close friends would admit how frightened and concerned they were for me during that time. But they also recalled being mystified by my positive attitude. Although they knew I stayed on top of things, they could not believe my lack of day-to-day worries about this condition. In retrospect, it was as if I had acquired some strange type of mental immunity that no one could understand. But there was nothing strange or incomprehensible about it. The daily drops in my bucket from friends and family had built a reserve in my bucket that was sustainable during tough times.
A surplus of positive emotions.
While I was in high school, my family members continued to point out specific strengths they would notice, which helped a great deal in shaping my priorities and ambitions. By my junior year of high school, it was clear to me that I wanted to study psychology in college. I loved research and learning about what makes people tick. So I searched out and applied to schools across the nation with strong psychology programs. Of course, my family was incredibly supportive of my going away to college. They helped with applications and went with me on visits to several schools. My family's positive support enabled me to quickly adjust to a new college environment. Even though they were more than 1,000 miles away, they still managed to fill my bucket on a regular basis. During my first 3 years of college, everything went smoothly. Unfortunately, there were more challenges ahead. In my senior year of college, an exam revealed a tumor in one of my adrenal glands. 5 years later, doctors found cancerous tumors in my kidney. While working on this book, scans revealed several new tumors on my pancreas, adrenal glands, and spinal cord. In each case, there was some fear and initial frustration. But my most memorable reaction was a sense of relief in knowing that these tumors were caught before they could metastasize and spread to other organs. My vigilance and awareness of the disease had paid off. Each condition could be managed with surgery. So I reviewed as many articles as I could find on each condition, wanting to fully understand my surgical options and the associated risks. All of my energy was focused on what could be done. My energy was not focused on what had already occurred or aspects beyond my control. To this day, I have never stopped in my tracks and asked, "Why did all of this happen to me?" I mean it. I may have been frustrated, but I never rallied against fate, and there's a big difference between the two. Personally, I saw no good reason to sit around and dwell on the negative or feel sorry for myself in these situations. It would get me nowhere. Besides, such wallowing could have worsened my emotional and physical health. Although the threat of facing various forms of cancer is with me every day, I see no alternative other than to focus on what can be done to stay ahead of this disease. And I can honestly say that it's easy to maintain this attitude on a daily basis. Why? That's simple. After almost 3 decades of life, I cannot recall a single day when my bucket wasn't filled over and over again by family members and friends.
We all need full buckets.
My case is obviously an extreme example of bucket filling. It might even sound contrived to me if I were hearing this story for the first time. But let me reassure you that every word is true. Given my ongoing physical challenges, this high-dose bucket filling has literally been a lifesaver. We are all certain to face major challenges as we progress through life. Often we feel as if we were dealt a bad hand and that life is unfair. But we don't have to allow ourselves to be defined by our hardships. Our responses to difficult events and our emotional state are much more important. Positive reinforcement about our strengths can buffer us against getting overwhelmed with the negative. And understanding what we do best allows us not only to survive, but grow in the face of adversity.
Chapter 5. Making it personal.
The personal story you just heard is admittedly unusual, but there are countless examples of people whose lives were made better and more productive by frequent bucket filling. In fact, you can see this happening in great workplaces all the time. Remember that customer service representative in Chapter 2 who treated you so well when you called in with a problem? Let's say you were so impressed that you asked for his name. And let's also say that you called back later to tell Ted's supervisor what he had done to win you over. As you were giving details about his friendly voice or efficient problem-solving technique, his supervisor was scribbling notes as fast as he possibly could. 30 minutes later, as Ted completed a call in which he won over yet another irate customer, yes, he does this all day, he got a new email message from his boss. The first thing Ted noticed when he opened the message was that his boss had copied a group of Ted's closest friends from work on the email. The subject line read, "You made a difference today." Ted's eyes immediately moved to the text of the message, where his supervisor described exactly what Ted had done to win you over. As he detailed the scenario for Ted and his peers, he dropped in several direct quotes from your conversation. Ted's supervisor ended the note by explaining how Ted's actions not only satisfied a customer, but also made that person's day a lot easier. As Ted was reading the note, he could barely contain the giant grin on his face. Though fatigued from a long work day in which multiple customers berated him, he was suddenly rejuvenated by the message. Ted's boss knew the key to great bucket filling. Recognition is most appreciated and effective when it is individualized, specific, and deserved. Clearly, he understood that writing an email and copying Ted's peers would cause Ted's bucket to overflow. And perhaps Ted's boss also knows that the same approach won't work for Ted's colleagues, some of whom may prefer a quiet pat on the back or perhaps more boisterous praise in a meeting. The point is, there are unique and specific ways to fill each person's bucket, and most certainly inappropriate ways as well. Generic, one-size-fits-all awards don't work. Neither does recognition that seems forced or false. And sometimes the recognition you think will inspire an employee backfires in the worst and most public way.
The nightmare scenario.
Consider the true story of Susan, a manager, and her stellar customer service representative, Matt. The following events transpired at a large insurance company that Gallup consulted with in the 1980s. When Susan became a division manager in this organization, she quickly learned that her success would hinge on her ability to inspire her customer service group toward better performance. At one point in her career, Susan was a customer service rep herself, and she just loved to win big awards and hear the ovations when she stood up in front of a crowd of her colleagues. During the workday, she would look up at some of her favorite plaques on the wall and remember the rush she felt from winning an award. That really got her going. So, Susan decided to set up a major awards ceremony to recognize her customer service reps. She held the event at the finest hotel in the city. She invited all of the reps and their families to the celebration, and she hired a well-known speaker and some first-class entertainers. The last portion of the program was the major year-end recognition for the individual reps with the best annual performances. To further highlight Matt, the top producer, Susan would save his award for last. She wanted that presentation to be the night's main event. The drape-covered easel on the stage inspired a lot of chatter and anticipation. Susan hoped this award would motivate Matt for years to come, so before announcing that Matt was the top producer, Susan detailed a long list of all the star employees' accomplishments and showered him with praise. Then, she pulled the drape off the award and held the prize over her head as she read Matt's name. This was the moment Susan had been scripting in her head for the past few weeks. She had even imagined the delighted look on Matt's face. To Susan's amazement, just the opposite happened. Matt was furious. The painful expression on his face and his hostile body language spoke volumes. The angry rep walked to the microphone and proceeded to tell the group that he didn't even want the award. It was just a plaque and had no meaning for him. Plus, he had a bunch already. He didn't need one more. It was the worst night of Susan's life. Not only had this debacle hurt the morale of the group, Susan now needed to figure out a way to win back her best customer service representative. So, after Susan got over the shock of the whole affair, she started to think about how she could acknowledge Matt in the future.
A one-size-does-not-fit-all approach.
Susan started by learning more about Matt. She discovered that this star employee loved nothing more than his two young daughters. Whenever Matt talked about them, his face lit up. At the office, he was always showing off the newest pictures of his daughters. The next year, Matt was again one of the top customer service reps. Susan was determined to get the award ceremony right. She had called Matt's wife and asked her to take the two girls to the best photographer in the area for a formal portrait and to keep it a secret. When the big night rolled around, everything was in place. Susan began the ceremony by talking about a very special man. She described not only the top customer service rep, but the passionate family man as well. Then, Susan unveiled the beautiful portrait of Matt's two lovely daughters. Matt immediately rushed toward the stage and embraced Susan. His eyes were filled with tears. Everyone in the room was moved. Matt couldn't have imagined a more meaningful and personal kind of recognition. It changed the way he looked at his boss and job forever.
Individualize, individualize, individualize.
The lesson here is clear. If you want people to understand that you value their contributions and that they are important, the recognition and praise you provide must have meaning that is specific to each individual. Not only is individualized bucket filling more effective in boosting productivity in the workplace, it builds sustainable relationships and changes people's lives forever.
Chapter 6. 5 Strategies for Increasing Positive Emotions.
To increase positive emotions in your life and others' lives, you must make a habit of filling buckets. This isn't news to you. By now, we know that our relationships, careers, and lives will be much more fulfilling if we increase the flow of positive emotions around us. But just knowing this isn't enough. Like any goal in life, you must have specific, actionable plans to transform good intentions into reality. So we examined our database of more than 4,000 open-ended interview responses on this topic and narrowed the list down to the 5 strategies that are most likely to produce results.
The 5 strategies. Strategy 1. Prevent bucket dipping. Strategy 2. Shine a light on what is right. Strategy 3. Make best friends. Strategy 4. Give unexpectedly. Strategy 5. Reverse the golden rule. Strategy 1. Prevent bucket dipping.
Just as we have to start eliminating debt before we can truly save, we must start to eliminate bucket dipping before we can truly begin to fill buckets. After hearing the theory of the dipper in the bucket, one man we know decided to put it to the test. He was looking for a way to eliminate his own dipping from others' buckets. So he developed a simple habit of asking himself if he was adding to or taking from the other person's bucket in each interaction. He told us it was a difficult habit to get into at first, but after some time, he realized it was working. By catching himself before he uttered a negative comment, and in some cases making a more positive one instead, he started making himself and the people around him feel better. For the next few days, try to catch yourself in the act of bucket dipping, then stop it. Consider your most recent interactions. Have you poked fun at someone? Touched on an insecurity? Blatantly pointed out something the person does wrong? If so, try and push the pause button in your head next time. Once you've successfully curtailed your own bucket dipping, encourage similar changes among those around you. Are people in your work group or school chronically criticizing or mocking others? Do you ever notice them teaming up and group dipping from someone's bucket? The next time you see bucket dipping in progress, do something about it. Convince others that unwarranted negativity only makes matters worse. The reality is that some persistently negative or hurtful people simply won't change despite your best efforts. They've got long-handled dippers and they intend to use them. If serving as an example won't help, then steer clear of these kinds of people as much as possible for your own well-being and emotional health. Once you've consciously started to eliminate bucket dipping, keep track of your progress by scoring your interactions. That's right. Reflect on your last few exchanges with another person. Decide if, overall, each interaction was more positive or negative. Score each one as either a plus or a minus in your head. Write them down if you need to. We've provided a worksheet on our website at www.bucketbook.com to help. Were the majority of those interactions positive or negative? Now, as you consider what it would take to fill the buckets of your friends, family, co-workers, and others, ask yourself, what would it take for me to reach that magic ratio of 5 positive interactions for every 1 negative interaction that I heard about in Chapter 3?
Strategy 2. Shine a light on what is right.
Each interaction gives us the chance to shine a light on what's right and fill a bucket. A friend of ours recently discovered the power of focusing on what is right. Unhappy in her marriage, she had been after her husband for weeks to make changes. He didn't seem interested in spending much time with her, and when she complained, he got defensive. So she drew even more attention to the things that upset her, hoping he would notice. Instead, she found that things seemed to get worse. Realizing that telling her husband how much he disappointed her wasn't working, she tried an experiment. She began to draw attention to the things he did well and what she liked about him. She was skeptical, but she had nothing to lose. What do you think happened? After several days, her husband was happier when he came home and more engaged in the relationship. Eventually, his attentiveness and warmth began to fill her bucket, just as her positive outlook towards him had filled his. But the most unexpected thing was that she felt happier on her own by focusing on the positive rather than dwelling on the negative. And this, in turn, caused her to be much more positive in her interactions with other people. After a few weeks, both she and her husband were passing this newfound energy along to friends and coworkers. Never underestimate the long-term influence of filling others' buckets. Dr. Barbara Fredrickson says that positive emotions create chains of interpersonal events, the far-reaching results of which you may or may not get to see in person, but they are there and happening. Every time you fill a bucket, you're setting something in motion. Consider this. If you fill 2 buckets a day, and owners of those 2 buckets go on to fill 2 new buckets, more than 1,000 buckets will have been filled at the end of 10 days. If each of those same people filled 5 buckets instead of 2, more than 19 million buckets would be filled in just 10 days. So continue the chain. When someone fills your bucket, accept it. Never brush it off and diminish what that person is doing. Fill their bucket in return by saying thank you, letting them know that you appreciate the compliment or recognition. In turn, you are more likely to share your renewed positive energy with others. Do you want to see how much bucket filling you do compared to others? On our website, you'll find a 15-question positive impact test designed with just that purpose in mind. The test was created to help you determine if you are filling buckets on a regular basis. We encourage you to complete this assessment right away so you have an initial score that indicates whether you have low impact, some impact, or a high impact on your environment. You will also be able to see how your score compares to others based on results from a Gallup poll. Don't be concerned if your score is low at first. This assessment was designed to provide you with a measure for continuous improvement. The questions evaluate key areas of your progress. To be even more intentional about your progress in bucket filling, consider printing the list of questions from the website and use them as a guide for improvement. Send the link to friends if you want to see how your score compares to theirs. It might be interesting to identify the best bucket fillers in your work group, circle of friends, or family. Try it out now and again in a few months. See if your score improved.
Positive impact test questions.
1. I have helped someone in the last 24 hours. 2. I am an exceptionally courteous person. 3. I like being around positive people. 4. I have praised someone in the last 24 hours. 5. I have developed a knack for making other people feel good. 6. I am more productive when I am around positive people. 7. In the last 24 hours, I have told someone that I cared about her or him. 8. I make it a point to become acquainted with people wherever I go. 9. When I receive recognition, it makes me want to give recognition to someone else. 10. In the last week, I have listened to someone talk through his or her goals and ambitions. 11. I make unhappy people laugh. 12. I make it a point to call each of my associates by the name she or he likes to be called. 13. I notice what my colleagues do at a level of excellence. 14. I always smile at the people I meet. 15. I feel good about giving praise whenever I see good behavior.
Strategy 3. Make best friends.
In grade school, kids often stick with sports teams, cheerleading, music, or other extracurricular groups, even when the activity isn't a clear fit for their interests. If they're experiencing no push from parents and having little success, then why do they stay involved? Maybe it's the same reason why employees stay with organizations that are less than ideal, or even unhealthy. They probably have a best friend there. If you think about it, most of us join and stay with groups, teams, and organizations because of our best friends. We say best friend because our study of great workplaces found that having friends, good friends, or close friends on the job was not as important as having a best friend at work. People with best friends at work have better safety records, receive higher customer satisfaction scores, and increase workplace productivity. Even though the term best friend does imply some exclusivity, it doesn't necessarily mean you should limit yourself to one very close friend. We would even go as far as to recommend that you have several relationships of the best friend caliber among your workplace, home, and social circles. Great relationships lead to a significant increase in life satisfaction. Noted psychologist Ed Diener found that the happiest people have high-quality social relationships. On the other hand, Diener and other researchers have found that lonely people suffer psychologically. Consider some of your best relationships. They were probably formed through an early series of positive interactions. You're not likely to become good friends with someone if the majority of your initial interactions are negative. Remember this during your first interactions with a new acquaintance. Start by learning the names of people you see regularly. And for each one, make sure you learn the name he or she prefers to be called. Sure, this may seem like a small thing, but it can make a major impression. It's tough to build relationships until you know someone by name. Your acquaintances may soon become friends. Whether you want to build many relationships or just a few deep ones, your best approach is to fill a person's bucket in your very first interaction. This is a powerful way to initiate new relationships and to strengthen your existing relationships. In fact, your friendships are unlikely to survive, let alone thrive, without regular bucket filling. Put this concept to work today. Begin with the most important people in your life. Tell them how important they are to you and why. Don't assume they already know. Even if they do, they'd probably love to hear it anyway. Continue to learn more about what builds them up. Be a catalyst for an even more trusting, lasting, and positive relationship. Listen to your friends with unconditional, positive regard. Support them in their endeavors. Encourage them. Be a mentor, or at least be the person they know they can always go to for a kind word. But don't stop the process with family and friends. At work, become the person known for noticing when others do a great job. Learn something new about each person you work or interact with. Create positive interactions with acquaintances, even strangers. You might start to notice that more and more people want to be around you.
Strategy 4. Give unexpectedly.
In Chapter 3, we mentioned a Today segment in which a troubled student described how the encouraging words of one teacher turned his entire life around. Well, there were a few other twists to Katie Couric's segment that morning. As soon as the young man, Brian Bennett, finished telling his story, Couric surprised him by bringing his teacher onto the set. Brian's face lit up as she walked out with her husband, who had been one of his favorite high school teachers. As it turns out, these two mentors just happened to be Barbara and Mac Bledsoe, the parents of NFL All-Star quarterback Drew Bledsoe. After they visited with one another, Couric announced that she had another surprise for Brian. Drew Bledsoe walked out and gave Brian his jersey and football. Brian was overwhelmed with positive emotions as a result of this unexpected gift. According to a recent poll, the vast majority of people prefer gifts that are unexpected. Expected gifts do fill our buckets, but for some reason, receiving things unexpectedly fills our buckets just a little bit more. It's all about the element of surprise, and the gift doesn't have to be anything big to be successful. Luxury retailer Saks Fifth Avenue conducted an experiment in which sales associates surprised customers who were known to shop infrequently with a small gift. Although it was a mere token of Saks appreciation, the customers loved it, and the sales associates did too. This program helped grow the store's business by transforming casual shoppers into regular customers. An unexpected gift doesn't have to be tangible either. It can be a gift of trust or responsibility. Sharing something personal or entrusting a friend with a secret can fill his or her bucket. In your own interactions, look for opportunities to give small gifts to others out of the blue, maybe a funny little trinket, a hug, or an offer to grab a cup of coffee. Even a smile can be an unexpected and cherished gift. Consider unexpected sharing as well. What books, articles, or stories could you send someone that would positively influence his or her day? In the spirit of unexpected giving, here's a gift from us to you. We want to share with you something that's already helped more than 1 million people discover their strengths. It's the product of decades of Gallup study. It has been used in 48 countries, and it is the cornerstone of several of Don's books, including the national bestseller Now Discover Your Strengths. It's called the Clifton Strengths Finder. Don created this web-based assessment to help people uncover their talents. Research shows that people who complete this assessment and learn about their strengths are more confident, more positive, more productive, and have more direction in their lives. And they're also more likely to focus on the strengths of other people and thus fill their buckets. We hope that taking the Clifton Strengths Finder assessment and learning about your natural talents will fill your bucket and, at the same time, make you a world-class bucket filler. Inside this audiobook packaging, you will find an invitation card with a unique 16-digit ID code that will allow you to take one Clifton Strengths Finder assessment free of charge. Upon completion, you'll receive a customized guide that will get you started on building your top 5 themes of talent. We hope you take advantage of this opportunity to see inside yourself and share what you discover with others.
Strategy 5. Reverse the Golden Rule.
In the case of bucket filling, "do unto others as you would have them do unto you" doesn't apply. Instead, we suggest a slight variation. Do unto others as they would have you do unto them. We devoted chapter 5 to illustrating this point, but we want to reiterate. When it comes to robust and meaningful bucket filling, individualization is key. So when you're bucket filling, go ahead and reverse, or at least redefine, the golden rule. As you learned from Matt, the customer service representative who received the portrait of his daughters, the things that make you unique also determine what really fills your bucket, and vice versa. It's unlikely that the exact same things will mean quite as much to anyone else. Some of us prefer tangible rewards or gifts, while others are driven by words and acknowledgement. And while certain people want to receive kind words in front of a crowd, others prefer a quieter, one-to-one commendation or compliment from someone they love, admire, or respect. Another important aspect of individualization is this. What we recognize in others helps them shape their identity and their future accomplishments. This is why bucket filling must be specific to the individual. Not sure how to start? Just ask some questions. We've included a few for you to consider. Try them out on your friends. If you're a manager, Discover the power of asking your people these questions and then acting on them. More information is available at our website.
The Bucket Filling Interview.
1. By what name do you like to be called? 2. What are your hot buttons, hobbies, or interests you like to talk about a lot? 3. What increases your positive emotion or fills your bucket the most? 4. From whom do you most like to receive recognition or praise? 5. What type of recognition or praise do you like best? Do you like public, private, written, verbal, or other kinds of recognition? 6. What form of recognition motivates you the most? Do you like gift certificates, a title for winning a competition, a meaningful note or email, or something else? 7. What is the greatest recognition you have ever received? In addition to being individualized, it will mean more to the recipient if your praise is specific. Putting praise into writing or email is a great way to do this. Written recognition is also especially rewarding because it serves as a lasting acknowledgement, something the recipient can reflect on over and over again. Visit bucketbook.com to send an electronic drop for your bucket or to create a printable drop. These are two simple ways to provide written recognition. Feel free to use this system or make up your own, whatever works best for you and each recipient. Drops have been used in businesses, schools, and places of worship for more than 3 decades. Millions of people have used them. Some people have kept the drops they received for many years as a reminder of their accomplishments. Here are a few comments we've heard from people who have used drops.
Drops are compliments. They're a way of telling a person you've done an outstanding job or thank you for what you've done.
Drops create positive energy where none previously existed.
Anybody can send a drop to anybody else, so it isn't top-down or bottom-up. Drops can come from any direction. This is not management patting someone on the head and saying, "Yes, you've done a good job, and we hope to get more out of you."
A drop can be a thank you or a moment in time when you caught someone doing something great and understood or appreciated what they did. I think a drop is a way to capture an interaction or moment with someone and say, "I noticed this about you. I care about you, and I want you to know it."
Try it. Do it. Write drops and encourage others to do it, too. I think people will get excited about the concept and not wait to get agreement from everybody about it. Try it in a small area within your organization and see what happens.
I'm now going to read for you the actual text from a drop that I wrote to Don when I was 11 years old to thank him for the idea of starting the business I mentioned in Chapter 4. A drop for your bucket. Dated 11/4/1982. Thanks for giving me the idea of starting BizKids. It has really helped me learn about business. I think it was a great idea, and I'm very glad I pursued it. BizKids is now successful because of your excellent ideas. Love, Tom. Now here's our challenge. Set a goal to write at least 5 drops or other forms of recognition every month. If you need to, print a few drops from our website and set them somewhere where you'll see them to help you remember to take the time to compose them. If you don't like writing by hand, you can type them or send electronic drops from bucketbook.com. The site will also allow you to set up bucket-filling reminders in case you need a few prompts. Once you're done writing a drop, you can quietly slip the note to the recipient in person, send it, email it, or read it out loud with fanfare. Do whatever fills his or her bucket most. This is the essence of great bucket filling.
Epilogue.
Imagine what your world will be like 1 year after you have engaged in daily bucket filling. We suspect the following changes will have occurred. Your workplace will be a lot more productive and fun. You'll have more friends. Your colleagues and customers will be more satisfied and engaged. Your marriage will be stronger. You'll enjoy closer relationships with your family and friends. You'll be healthier, happier, and well on your way to a longer life. There's plenty of scientific and anecdotal evidence to demonstrate the importance of bucket filling in our lives. Take every opportunity to increase the positive emotions of those around you, It will make a big difference. It may even change the world. Don't waste another moment. A bucket somewhere is waiting for you to fill it.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of How Full Is Your Bucket? Anniversary Edition by Donald O. Clifton, Ph.D. and Tom Rath. Performed by Tom Rath and Jeff Cummings. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.